Hello and welcome to another episode of the Clippers Beat. It is Wednesday and we've got a couple of weird days of practice. What is this thing we call practice here for the Clippers? And to kind of discuss the state of this team right now, I welcome on a guest who's been on this pod before. Farbod, how are you? Happy hump day. Thank you so much for taking the time.
I'm doing great. I mean, if you hear my nose kind of stuffy, I just got over a cold, so try to bear with me if you hear me sounding kind of weird.
Hey, well, we wish you the best of health moving forward, but it kind of is like everyone has that thing going on right now, going around right now. So Godspeed to you and getting rid of that head cold. But Farbod, the Clippers are currently 26-12 right now. They're fourth in the Western Conference. I guess looking at this team where we stand, 38 games in, almost halfway through the regular season, what have you learned?
I mean, it's kind of, I wrote a piece about it maybe like 2 weeks ago or so. It's a really hard team to gauge because their losses, like five of them are against under 500 teams that are all really bad. But then all five of those losses, the team was never healthy except for the San Antonio game. Like when they went against New Orleans, there was no Kawhi, and they were missing two other starters. When they went against, say, for instance, the Bulls, there was no Kawhi again. So it's a little hard to gauge with this team. But what you can see is that they clearly need time to practice. They have their moments where they get a little too ISO heavy and a little too jump shot heavy, but the defense kind of carries them sometimes, not recently, but typically their defense carries them, especially when they have bad offensive droughts, even though they're a top five offensive team. So I think what you see is a team that's loaded and is kind of running on talent, but hasn't really picked up their identity or their system yet.
And yet the two games they really truly show up for are against the heavyweight Lakers, which is just so funny because I agree with you. It seems like they're grinding through games with what they have, and maybe grind isn't the right verb there, but they're getting through games. I don't know. Would you say this team has a true identity yet besides the fact that they're quote unquote gritty and like a good defensive presence when they want to be? What would you assess this team's identity as?
You know, it's weird. The first 10 or 20 games of the season, I thought I knew the team's identity because there were moments where, like against Boston or against Houston, they were down 7 points with a minute left and then somehow won the game, both games. It was just kind of crazy. It kind of puts you in a perspective of, oh, okay, so this is the team that no matter how much they're down by, they usually end up figuring out a way to win, and they're very clutch in the fourth quarter. And Pat Bev had said they were really clutch in the fourth quarter, the beginning of the season. And then as the season went on, I think they were like 12-0, 13-0, when they had a 10-point lead or more. And then all of a sudden, about 3 weeks ago after that Chicago Bulls game, they just kept blowing games after having 10-point leads. So then all of a sudden the identity kind of fumbled into, oh, are they the team that blows leads now instead of having comeback games? So I think somewhere along that way they lost their identity. In the month of January, maybe February is when they have to regain it, because they certainly had it before when the season started.
Yeah, and you and I think they came off this unique weekend of back-to-back noon games at home, which is just so bizarre. But you were at the big blowout loss to the Memphis Grizzlies. I was at the win against the New York Knicks. It was good to see that they turned it around. But what didn't you see in that loss of the Grizzlies, which kind of loss to the Grizzlies, which can kind of show what this team's worst nightmare can be?
There was just no urgency. I mean, it seemed like everybody, I mean, almost every single player in the locker room admitted it, mm-hmm. that it seemed like they showed up and thought they were just going to beat the Grizzlies without respecting them. And then the Grizzlies had more effort and more hustle than they did. And I think they just weren't ready for it. It was like the first time where I think last year they were such underdogs that like they always had to hustle every single game because they were never the favorite. This seemed like one of the very first times all year where they just were like, we're going to stomp these guys. We're fine. And then they did it. And there was no Patrick Beverley on the court to kind of yell at them and tell them, you know, to bring it up a notch. And then you saw the frustration with Trez post-game, and he kind of unexpectedly went off on his teammates. But I think he was just embarrassed about the loss. I don't really know if there is like a team chemistry issue or anything like that, because I haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
I can say, like, maybe it's a little super business.
Yes.
I mean, they still joke around, but they don't joke around as much as they did when they had Tobias, Boban, and DJ, but that's because you had Tobias, Boban, and DJ.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. You've been a regular in this Clippers locker room. And from my impression as someone who has just seen different teams, this, like you said, business-like is the atmosphere with these Clippers. Have you sensed maybe a cultural shift with the arrival of Kawhi and PG?
A little bit, but it was kind of like that last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was going into that direction last year. But the thing is, like, even with the media, there's always a certain side that they're going to show the media and a certain side they're not. They're going to show completely different. So, like, I remember last year, somebody was telling me that Avery Bradley was the biggest bully on the team. Like, he just liked to – he would haze the players and give them a hard time. But if from a media side, when you see Avery Bradley, he is, like, the most soft-spoken guy that you would never expect to haze anybody. So there's – you know what I mean? So there's going to be three different sides to a player. There's going to be what you see on the court. There's going to be what you see with the media. And then there's going to be what you see when everyone's gone. So
it's like the older sibling when the parents are around. Yeah, yeah. The older sibling when the parents are around and then versus when they aren't around with the younger sibling. I totally understand what you're getting at there. But I can't imagine without the presence of Boban in the locker room, things might be dialed down just a notch.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely dialed down from then. I mean, after the trade, it was pretty serious last year, too. Like, after they traded Boban and Tobias, the team was pretty serious, but not as serious as it is this year. Like, you used to see Patrick Beverley, like, talk shop with Tobias out loud all the time. You don't really see that too much now. Like, Mo Harkless is a really quiet guy. Kawhi is a quiet guy. PG just works out. And then it's just kind of like Pat and Trez and Zoo.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, looking at how this team is regarded on the national stage, it was interesting. A couple of notes I've heard floating around the talking heads this week. It was like Ramona Shelburne and Brian Windhorst talking about how what you alluded to is that this team hasn't really had a lot of practice time and that Doc hasn't even practiced Kawhi and Paul George a lot together. Is that probably what we're seeing on the court? And where do you think the solution lies other than just getting them more minutes in practice together?
I mean, getting them more minutes in practice together is always – it's always going to be the solution, and same as health. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's just tough because I think they've had only one game all year where the whole roster was healthy.
That's insane.
Against the Lakers.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next day they were supposed to be fully healthy against the Jazz, but then Pat Bev got hurt and then never happened again. And so it's so hard to judge when you're just shifting starting lineups over and over and over. And I remember I saw a stat that had them overwhelmingly marked as the team with the most starting lineups in the NBA right now. They were like the only one in the double digits of how many different starting lineups it had. So it's kind of hard to say what the solution is. I mean, I guess the biggest solution you have is to just communicate through it.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing that's going to keep you going through all of that is communication. And also having the lighter schedule right now really helps. Because at one point, the amount of games that they were playing was just kind of preposterous. I had compared their schedules to the other top four teams in the West, and the Clippers play three times. They did three games in 4 nights, and they had 3 to 4 back-to-backs within a month. And then the Lakers, Rockets, Nuggets all only had one back-to-back within that entire time frame. So it was just kind of like they really needed to kind of put the brakes on their schedule, and I think right now is kind of a godsend for them.
What was your reaction when you learned what Lou Williams named his son?
I just kind of chuckled.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a TV show. I think it was Seinfeld or something, where they said they wanted to name their kid Seven. And I'm pretty sure George Costanza and like Seinfeld was like, I'm going to name my kid Seven because it'd be a funny, like, it'd be a cool name. And they had a whole episode around it. So that was what I immediately thought of.
And here we are with Six. I liked the way in which it references what Lou's accomplished with his career, but it's also, it's a little bit of a stretch, but you know what? The underground goat deserves it, so we'll go with that.
I just thought it was the picture of him with his son right after the game, watching the game, was pretty perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, like, as good of a moment as you could have had if you were a Clipper fan, just to see him and his son watching the team win in Sacramento, cap off the new year.
All right, so here I am, the audio end to this podcast got a little bit funky. So I am going to thank Farbod for his time. So very, very grateful. You should follow Farbod on Twitter. He's at Farbod_E. That's FARBOD_E. He's got incredible content from video to kind of reading between the lines because he's been around this Clippers franchise for years now. So he's got a pretty good pulse on what this team is all about. Farbod covers the Clippers for Forbes, easy for me to say. And once again, so very grateful for his time hopping on the podcast. So it was a quick one this week, but we're going to start amping up the content as we head into All-Star weekend and the second half of the regular season. Buckle up, guys. This is going to be a fun one. Once again, thank you for listening to this podcast. You can get the Clippers beat wherever you listen to your pods at or at clnsmedia.com.